United States versus Reeves. Mr. Springett.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Simon Springett, appearing along with co-counsel Catherine Moskup, under 7-Eleven licenses through the Bloom Legal Clinic at Northwestern, on behalf of defendant appellant Mario Reeves. There are two reasons why a remand is warranted in this case. First, in Padilla v. Kentucky, the Court set forth a new test saying that counsel is ineffective when he fails to tell a defendant about important consequences.
Yeah, but what you're talking about is counseling by a lawyer as to how you can continue your criminal career with minimal risk, right? So you say to the person, look, if you plead guilty, you're going to have a second strike, and it'll be really hard for you to go back into your criminal activity because the third strike, you know, that's the end. So try to fight this. Try to defeat the second strike. And then you can go about your criminal business, at least until you're convicted again, right? That's what you're asking for. How to minimize your risk of being prosecuted for your next crime.
No, Your Honor.
The assumption is you're going to continue being a criminal. That's why you have to worry about the third strike.
Probably a reasonable idea.
Right.
No, Your Honor, it's not just about risk minimization here.
Of course it is. What else could it be about?
Well, it can also be about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. As we argued in this court last week, a case where a defendant found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time when the government came to serve a warrant for his brother, and he happened to be at the house where there were a number of guns.
It's fine to say to a person, you shouldn't plead guilty if you're innocent and, you know, if we have a reasonable chance of getting you off, that's fine. It's another thing to say, you shouldn't plead guilty. You shouldn't plead guilty because if you want to go back into, you know, your career, if you want to reenter your career as a criminal, you really have to fight every prosecution. Otherwise, you're gonna wind up really behind the eight ball.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Again, it's not all about anticipating going back into crime. It said you can get caught up in the wrong place in the wrong time.
That's fine to say to a person, look, if you're innocent or if you're guilty, but the government can't prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, obviously you shouldn't plead guilty. You should fight it. You'll be acquitted. That's fine. But to go on and say, you know, and by the way, if you're convicted, you get a second strike, and now you go on. And now, if you go back into committing crimes, you know you're going to be. It's going to be a really risky career for you.
Well, the Padilla court said you also need to focus on the importance, the severity of these consequences to the defendant at the time they're considering the plea, and the consequences.
Consequences are contingent on his continuing committing crimes. That's what I find unattractive about your position.
Well, Your Honor, at the time he's considering the plea, the consequences, his eligibility for, his exposure to these sentencing enhancements, these very severe sentencing enhancements.
The deportation was automatic if he pled guilty, right?
In that particular case, it was.
Which makes a substantial difference from the option to do or not to do criminal activity afterwards.
However, in other deportation cases or immigration cases, deportation is not necessarily automatic, and other courts have held that a consequence does not have to be automatic to satisfy the Padilla test. It can still be contingent, such as the Bowder case in the 11th Circuit.
But in the deportation situation, you're deported, or maybe you're not deported, but in any event, that sanction is not contingent on your continuing to commit crimes, right? Whereas here, the only reason to worry about the second strike is that you're going back into your criminal activities. And so I say it's much riskier to be a criminal if you face a third strike next time you're convicted than if you face a first or second.
I agree it's riskier, Your Honor, but it's not all about the defendant planning.
It is all about. What else is it about? What else is it about?
It's not anticipating he's going to commit more crimes. It's knowing that where he's returning to.
But if you don't commit future crimes, you're not going to. It's not going to make any difference whether you have a second strike, right?
The difference is that once he enters that plea, he's now in a different status of person.
Only if he commits another crime.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Only if he gets another crime.
No, at the moment he pleads guilty.
Oh, yeah. He's convicted.
He's eligible for these enhancements.
But is the weight of what happens when you plead guilty is the deferred weight. He's got facing the same problem now, pleading guilty or not guilty. He's either going to have to stand trial and take a chance and go to jail for longer, or plead guilty and go shorter. The long-term run is that he loses if he gets caught again.
Right?
Agreed, Your Honor. He loses if he gets caught again. But I see I'm into my rebuttal time.
Yes.
Because as Judge Bauer was saying, he's going to get a break if he pleads guilty. So if he's clearly guilty and he decides nevertheless to fight it, knowing he's going to get a lower sentence, it must be because he's worried about the third strike. So he'll take the longer sentence now, the risk of a longer sentence, hope to be acquitted, because he doesn't want to be put out of the crime business by having two strikes and therefore facing the third.
Again, Your Honor,
once you get two strikes, if you're an intelligent criminal, I suppose you retire, right? It's too dangerous. That's the whole idea of the third
strike.
There's
no question pending. You ought to cut, save yourself a little.
I'd just like to say that the Padilla Court focuses on the importance of the consequence to the defendant. This is an important consequence. And
but here the consequence is is contingent on your planning future crimes.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Well, why?
Because it's not. It is contingent on the.
Right.
First,
that's
the consequence. The consequence is the eligibility.
It's contingent on a future crime, right?
The consequence is the eligibility, and the importance is the severity of the result that can happen from that.
If you continue committing crimes.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're not going to give her a chance to say anything.
There are no further questions. I'll reserve the remainder of our time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Muscup, are you arguing too? No.
She's coming up for rebuttal.
Okay, Mr. Donovan, your turn.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Donovan on behalf of the United States. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honors, the Supreme Court's opinion in Padilla v. Kentucky does not provide the result that is sought by the defendant. It does require advice on consequences that flow immediately and directly from a guilty plea. However, as the Padilla Court noted, deportation is an automatic result of many guilty pleas. That is not true of a sentencing enhancement such as the 851 at issue in this case. A subsequent criminal proceeding is by definition divorced.
Well, does it matter if it's, does it have to be certain to follow? What if it's just highly likely?
I don't believe there's any indication in the Padilla opinion, Your Honor, that mere likelihood.
That's not an answer. What's your answer?
The answer is, Your Honor, that if it were a consideration of the defendant.
Hey, come on. Does it make a difference whether it's certain or merely highly likely?
It does make a difference, Your Honor.
Why?
Because the Padilla Court limited itself to.
No. That's the scope of the Padilla decision. I'm asking you, what should the rule be? Should we require absolute certainty, or is it enough that there's a highly likely consequence?
The rule should be that if it is.
Even deportation isn't certain, right? There's cancellation of removal and all sorts of.
That's correct.
You can do.
Who's the president?
That's correct, Your Honor. So if a result is highly likely but is also a result of the guilty plea at issue, that would be a rational rule to apply to require advice of counsel. However, in this case, we're talking about a subsequent proceeding, and therefore the claim by the appellant in this case is far outside of that rule. In addition, Your Honor, the crux of the defendant's argument is that they're trying to extend Padilla to require advice on eligibility rather than upon a particular consequence. And the rationale that the Padilla court adopted cannot serve as a basis to extend its holding that far, nor does this provide a reasonable means for a confining or determining the constitutional right to counsel. The conversation that is suggested by the defendant's, I'm sorry, by the appellant's position has no limiting principle. And in fact, the specific advice suggested in the reply brief, in fact, doesn't provide any additional information to a defendant apart from the fact that there is a worse consequence in the future if you commit additional crime. This court has previously held that such advice to a defendant is needless because it doesn't add information to what a defendant would already know. In addition, it is advice about some prospective future conduct that requires the lawyer to be prescient or to predict what may happen in the future. Further, Your Honor, the specific advice that might be offered by a defense counsel in this situation is as myriad and pluriform as the jurisdictions and enhancements that exist in the 50 states and in the multiple federal statutes that might be implicated when a lawyer would seek to try to give this advice. Certainly in this case,
a defendant's told that they won't be allowed to have a gun if they're convicted of a felony?
I believe not, Your Honor.
They're not told.
That's correct. So there are certain civil rights that are not...
And voting and things like that, depending on the state, of course.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So those other consequences of a felony conviction aren't ordinarily told at the guilty plea,
that's
or
correct.
Told by the lawyer.
Whether individual lawyers provide that advice, Your Honor?
They're not required, in other words.
No, Your Honor. Not. I don't know any authority for that. Whether that's suggested best practice is another story. So, Your Honor, for these reasons, the fact that the suggestion by the defendant of the conversation between defense counsel and the client is far outside what can be understood to be required for effective assistance of counsel, in that it would require speculation on future conduct and the application of a myriad of laws to that conduct. The government's position is that the district court made the appropriate decision here in rejecting defendant's attempt to apply Padilla to his prior convictions in the context of this 851 enhancement. There are no further questions, Your Honors. I will...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Donovan. Ms. Mosca?
Your Honors, I'd like to address three arguments that were just made by the government. First, the government has now conceded that Padilla changed the landscape that was formerly applicable under the direct collateral test. Padilla adopted a new defendant-centered test that looks to the importance of a consequence to the defendant. Second, the government argues that that this is providing the defendant no new information and that the defendant already, in fact, knows about generally, guideline enhancements and that sort of consequence. However, defendant does not know about the severity of the consequence, especially in the case of these mandatory minimum sentences. There's no way that Mr. Reeves
would the lawyer have to tell his client that he's convicted of a felony, he can't have a gun, may not be able to vote and all that, can't be able to get a job in all likelihood?
this is where the Padilla test and its factors of severity and automaticness come in. So, for example, voting may not be a specifically severe consequence when compared to things like deportation or mandatory sentence enhancements. So in that sense, the myriad possibilities argument made by the government is not applicable here. Further, it doesn't matter whether or not the defendant has a sense. As Padilla specifically said, undocumented aliens will often be very well aware that there are deportation consequences for felonies. However, Padilla still requires notification of deportation consequences.
What would the lawyer be required to disclose? We have to read to him the enhancement provisions of the sentencing guidelines?
No, Your Honor. As a general matter, this warning would simply require counsel to inform defendant of the possibility for severe recidivist sentencing enhancements. If that's something that triggers a concern for the defendant, he can then inquire further, and the defendant can then go and pull specific statutory provisions that may apply for that defendant. Finally, there is not a floodgates argument here, as opposing counsel argues. 851 has a specific finality provision requiring that only the past 5 years' worth of convictions can be challenged. Further, Strickland still applies its high prejudice bar. Also, as we recognize in our briefs, the ABA standards have, for at least the past 10 to 15 years, required counsel to notify the defendant of collateral consequences such as recidivist sentencing enhancements. I see that my time is up, so if there are no further questions, we would ask that you remand for a prejudice hearing. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And were you and Mr. Springett appointed? Pardon?
Yes.
Well, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mr. Donovan as well.